Okay, we're recording this. Somebody's calling me. All right, my name is Melissa McDonald. If you're new to the room, we are going to do this one. It's called Making Every Minute Count. And I'm excited about it because it's a fun one. But the idea here is minutes are really important when it comes to working with kids. And so how do we use them? So what I want you to do, you're going to do a lot of talking at your tables. So go ahead right now and turn to your table and tell me what can you get done in a minute. So talk to each other. What can you get done in a minute? All right, what can you get done in a minute? I expect this group to be chattier, okay? I expect this. I need it. Okay, what can you get done in a minute? What's that?
Give them a hug.
You can give someone a hug. Absolutely. Now, if you hug them for a full minute, that could be awkward, right? A lot of people hugging. That's, yes, yeah. What else can you get done in a minute? Text message, yeah, absolutely. What else?
Well, you
introduce yourself, yeah. Great. Yeah, introduce yourself. I am recording, just so you know. I also forgot my Chinese name. So if you could remember and help me.
Lisa.
Ah, yes. My Lisa. Yes, like that, so. I'll work on the tone, but yes. Okay, so Chinyuan, what can you get done in a minute?
What can I get done in a minute?
In 1 minute, what can you get done?
Well, I just went to make a phone call and solve the problem.
You solved a problem in 1 minute. That's great. Would you agree that some people can get more done in a minute than other people?
Yeah.
I find that women get a little more done in a minute than men sometimes. I'm not saying anything against men, but I can get a lot more done in a minute than my husband can. Sometimes I'm like, what are you doing? Like, still, how are you still doing that? So what we're going to do is we're going to just see how long a minute will last. So we're going to do a couple minute to win it games. So what you have on your table is some food that you're not allowed to eat, even though I am eating Fruit Loops, all right? So here's what I want you to do. I need you to find a partner. So everybody find a partner really quick. All right, does everybody have a partner?
Yes.
Okay, pick one person to come up and get a, what's this called? Cup of marshmallows.
Okay.
Find
your partner.
Yeah, find your partner and then one person come up.
Okay.
I'll get out of
the
way.
You want to go ahead?
We have three in the group.
Well, it's kind of cheating, but sure. Yeah.
Yay.
You can.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, Jessica.
Let's get a cup.
Oh, yeah. Trying to go back.
There you go.
All right. Now, I need the other partner to come up and get an empty cup. Because I forgot about that. This is why I don't leave games. Right?
Thank you.
All right, and then, there's one on the ground. And then you need to find a spot in the room. Who still needs one?
We'll do the Oreo paper.
All right, you need to find a spot in the room because here's what's going to happen. You have to take, this is the person with the marshmallows, has to throw the marshmallows one at a time to the person with the empty cup. Okay, so find a spot where you need to take 5 steps back. Big steps, not cheating steps. Okay, did you take 5 steps back? Hey, no practicing. I see that. No practicing. All right, 5 steps back. You have to be 5 steps apart from each other. Now, listen, the person holding the empty cup may only hold it with one hand. All right? Only with one hand. Put your other hand behind your back. And you have to stay in one spot. So you can't be like, here. You have to stay in one spot. All right? Yeah, you can move the cup around. You guys need to take more steps back, I think. You took children steps, so take 5 big steps. All right, here we go. I'm going to start the timer as soon as I have it ready. And you have 1 minute to do this. Do you feel confident?
Yes.
On your mark, get set, go. All right, 10 seconds is gone. Some of you are good at this. All right, you have 30 seconds left. Everybody take 2 steps back right now. You have to get further apart. I made it too easy. You're silent, marshmallow throwers. Good job. Good job. Time! Time is up! Stop! All right. Hey, get with your partner and count how many marshmallows you got into the cup. If you littered marshmallows, you could pick those up and throw them away. All right. Go ahead and have a seat, and then we'll decide who won. All right. How many of you got 5 or more? All right, 10 or more? 15 or more? You guys have good hand-eye coordination. 20 or more? Oh, we lost a few there. Sherry, how many did you guys get?
23.
Wow. Okay, who got less than that? Everyone. Who wants to admit they got the least? Anybody? How many?
4.
So you didn't even get to raise your hand ever. I'm so sorry. But in your defense, you were very far apart. So you probably did it better than everyone because you were further apart. Maybe. Some of you were just really good at that. Now, let me ask you, as you were doing that, what were you thinking about? Catching the marshmallows, right? Or throwing it, right? Were you thinking about laundry?
No.
Okay. Were you thinking about dinner?
No.
Okay. You're like, these marshmallows look delicious, maybe. And you're welcome to eat the marshmallows. But you were really focused, right?
Yeah.
So that's what we want to talk about as we think about making every minute count with kids. We want to be really focused. We want to be really focused on what we're doing because we don't have a lot of time. And when you break it down by minute, then it's a little bit easier. It's amazing to me how I can waste minutes too. And all of a sudden I'm like, have you ever done that? You're on your phone and you're like, how long have I been on my phone? The new iPhone upgrade tells me now, and it's very disturbing. Like, I didn't know. But, you know, we can waste a lot of minutes, but the reality is, with kids, we can't waste our time with them, especially in the church setting, because we're getting less and less time with kids. So let me ask you, how often in the United States do you think people have to come to a church to be considered a regular attender? So how often every month would they be a regular attender at a church?
4 to 5 times.
4 to 5 times, okay.
One time.
Jessica, what were you going to say? Two? The correct answer is two. So good job. You may eat a marshmallow. The correct answer is two. So you are now considered a regular attender at a church if you come twice a month. Now, talking about culture shift, right? I remember... Oh, I like that. It's like a bird. It's fun. I remember back in the day, like I told you, I went to church 3-4 times a week, and I was a regular attender. Have you ever met somebody, and you're like, they're like, hey, where do you go to church? And you tell them, and they're like, so do I. They're like, what? I've never seen you there. And there are people all over that think they're a regular attender of a church, but they just come every once in a while. So, again, culture has shifted. And so we can be a little irritated with that or whatever, but the point is it's shifted. So what do we do with that? Now, if they come twice a month, and let's say we have kids for an hour each Sunday, would you say that's fair? What about in your church? How often or how much time on a Sunday, average Sunday morning, do you have with kids? Think about it. 90 minutes?
At most, 3 hours.
At most? Who else? Mine's about 45 minutes. Anyone else? So think about this. Let's say, we'll just split the difference. We'll say an hour. Get an hour with a kid on a Sunday, and they only come twice a month. Well, guess what? That's 24 hours in a year. So we get them for a very short time, like very, very short time. But the really encouraging thing is that this doesn't need to discourage us, because pipe cleaner. Don't get your pipe cleaners out yet. Don't touch your pipe cleaners. Those are for something else. How many of you have already, you know, created an animal out of your pipe cleaner? Because I would have. Okay, so let's say this is the week of a kid's life. What do you see when you look at it? Where does your eye automatically go? Right to this, right? You're like, that looks weird. What is that? That's church. But your eye goes there, doesn't it? And guess what church does and what being with the body of Christ does? It interrupts the week in a good way. And it makes a difference in the week in a good way. And so we can't be discouraged and go, oh, we only have this little bit of time with kids. It is, we wish we had more time, but we don't. So the reality is, what do we do with that time? And that's why we're talking about this making every minute count. I'm going to show you a few things that kids have written, because I always like to remind ourselves who we are serving. So I'm going to ask you guys, how many of you currently work with kids at church? Okay. How many of you work with teenagers at church? Okay. How many of you are teenagers and are raising your hands? And then how many of you would say that you really love kids who are 5 and under? That's your favorite age group. All right. Okay. How many of you would say that you like maybe that 5 to 9-year-old? All right. And then how about the 9 to 12-year-olds? Yes. Okay. That's my personal favorite age right in there. They're also the most challenging, but that's why I like them. And they're sassy, but I like it. So we all serve in different areas, but I always like to remind us what these kids are, who they are. And kids are really fun because they're not usually able to verbalize what they're thinking about. And part of that's just how their brain develops, so they're just not there yet. But when they write down stuff, we actually get a real glimpse into who they are. So I have a couple things. And some of these you might have seen already, but I think they're mostly new. God, are you real? Will you show me? So we're dealing with kids who want to know about God. We're dealing with kids who are like, well, is God real? And I always love the kid that's like lays down the challenge to God. Will you show me? I think that delights God. This one says, are you there? Do you see me? I'm afraid you're not there. Take the wheel. Show me the way. I don't know how. That has the makings of a great country song as well, doesn't it? Jesus, take the wheel. But look at that. Are you there? Do you see me? I'm afraid you're not there. These kids have real fears. They have real questions. But oftentimes, you won't see it when they come in. Like, oftentimes, they have a lot of stuff going on below the surface. Some of them, it's like way below the surface. You're like, something's wrong with that kid. Because kids are weird and they're different and they're processing, they're different, but they are really questioning and having big questions about who God is. This one says, help my brother stop doing drugs. And you can tell from the writing, this kid is not very old, but worried, so worried about his brother. So worried about his brother. This one says, help my mom find you and help her get better. It's amazing to me how often kids worry about their parents. All the time. And I really think if parents understood how much your kids agonize over you and worry about you and care about and pray for you, I think we'd all be crying. Because it's amazing to me. And these are not unique kids. I've had people say, well, you pulled out the good notes. No, I didn't. These are the average notes. If I pulled out the really good ones, you wouldn't have believed me. And if I would have pulled out any harder ones, we'd all be crying and have to go home. Because kids deal with really hard stuff. This one says, why is my relationship with you seeming incomplete? I want to know you, but I just struggle. Help me. I know this is part of your plan for me. Isn't it cool to see what they write to God? I love it. I love taking this to adults. Sometimes I get to talk to pastors, and they're like, oh, you do the kids. I'm like, let me show you what I do. And it blows them away because they don't present it in a way that we always see. But they're having these deep questions and thoughts. My parents are divorced and they keep fighting and it's very hard for me to see. That's a common one. I hope my parents will stop fighting and be home more. God, please help my parents believe in you. I don't want to be alone. That's a common one as well. And what I love about this, I mean, that's really hard to read, right? But what I love about it is the assumption is, God, I'm going to believe in you. So could you get my parents there? It's not, God, I'm done with you because my parents don't believe. Isn't that interesting? I talk to kids all the time. They're like, my parents don't believe, but I do. And I would argue, man, God can use one kid to change a whole family time and time again. And I have picture and story of that happening. It used to be that if we got the husband or the dad of the family, then the family would change, or the mom. And it's changed so much because we're in such a kid-centric culture. But if a kid gets passionate about Jesus, they can change your whole family. And I've seen it happen over and over again. That I would stop watching YouTube. I don't really know what they're watching on YouTube. I don't. This could be mom. Maybe said this to them quite a bit. But this is just honest. These are honest kids. This is who they are. Thank you for being near. Just know I do believe in you. I love when kids reassure God. That's my favorite part. Just know I do believe in you. This one says, let's see if I got it. Thank you for letting me walk into your hands. Thank you for letting me believe in you and start a relationship with you. So cool to see what they write. I just have one more. This one says, hello again. Love you forever. I think this kid probably like talked to God a year ago at camp. And they're like, oh yeah, that's right. Hello. Love you forever. And I'm going to draw some hearts. But I forgot to talk to you for a year. But they're just honest. And I wish we adults were a little more honest before God. Like, oh, sorry, I forgot about you today or all week. Sorry, I haven't read my Bible. Hello again. Still love you. Just know I do believe in you. Kids are honest. So go ahead and talk to your table for just a minute. What are some observations you're making as you look at those notes? All right, let me ask you, what are you thinking about when you look at those?
It's moving.
It is moving, isn't it? It's so moving. I collect their cards after each camp or event, and then I read them, usually on the airplane, and I cry. Like, I just sit in there like, oh, there's that girl who cries again, like, with her stack of cards. It's so moving. What else? They tell the truth. Yeah, I think kids are the most honest version of people. I just think they are. I love that. Hello again. Whoops. There's no like, Lord, forgive me. I'm such a horror. What would I, you know? It's just, oh yeah, hey, still love you. They're honest. They're so honest. And they get to the point too, don't they? They don't beat around the bush. They're like, my parents are fighting. Make it stop. They worry.
They have no fear to God.
Yeah.
In front of God.
Yep. They worry a lot, but they have no fear in front of God. Mm-hmm. And don't we want to raise up a generation of kids who go before God openly? Mm-hmm. I love that when I see that. Like, some of these will break my heart, but I'm so encouraged because all of these notes are ones that they've written to God. Mm-hmm. So they're going to the best possible solution. Mm-hmm. So there's no fear. Just here. And they worry all the time. Do you remember worrying as a kid? I did. I worried a lot. I worried about dumb stuff too. Like, I was sure our house would catch on fire. There was no substance to that, you know, but I worried and worried and worried about that. I worried about my dad when he traveled. I worried about my mom because she could be really mad sometimes and yell at me. And I didn't like that. I used to tell her, which don't ever say this to your mom when she's mad, but I would say, I'd quote scripture and be like, in your anger, do not sin. That never went over real well. I know. She's like, come here, you're getting beat. They worry. What other observations do you have?
I feel their heart, how they were pure.
Yeah. Very pure heart, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes the parents or they're very in tune to the environment. Probably
yeah.
The parents didn't say, but they pick that up.
Yeah.
And they worry. And then I guess it's on the other end, if the parents or the brother know how much they worry about them, they probably don't know.
Yeah. They are very in tune. And actually, it should scare us a little, if you have kids, how in tune they are. Like, not in a, like, oh, but in a just, wow, they really are. And I remember, like, when my parents would fight, I was very aware. And even if they went into their bedroom, like, that's not normal for them, like, to go in there. Like, I just knew. But they're very, very, very in tune. And I think sometimes we just aren't aware. And sometimes we see, like, the mom talks about the problem she's having, but we forget that the kid is experiencing a lot of those emotions as well.
They need an outlet to say these things because
yes.
Very often they don't. Like, nobody specifically asks them for their prayer requests or, you know, what's going on in their heart.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. They need an outlet. Desperately. I mean, they do. And we actually oftentimes in the church world are not great about providing outlets because we're about teaching. So we're teaching and we'll go, well, that's, I just don't have time for that. Or that's not in the lesson plan. That's not in the curriculum. And that's why, again, I'm not mocking curriculum or anything, but we as adult leaders have to realize that we man the curriculum. The curriculum doesn't man us. And so creating space like this where they can talk is so important. I was at Beulah Beach Camp last summer, and they had one day where they brought, they cycled kids through like my station for their Wacky Wednesday, and I had 1,000 kids come through, and I had 20 minutes to do the gospel. Totally not my way of like how I like to do stuff. It was just too quick. I like to build a relationship. But I intentionally, for those 20 minutes, every time I ended early, and I said, you have an opportunity to go talk to God or do business with God. And I didn't even have to say more than that, but point to like, here's where you can go do, here's some notes, and here's a place to give your note. Every time, without any explanation or very minimal, hordes of kids would go and do it. And what surprised me the most, and probably shouldn't have, but what surprised me the most, the group that had the most kids go forward to talk to God were the neighborhood kids who were there for day camp, who really didn't know God. They had no concept really of who God was. They were the biggest group. We ran out of space. I think every one of them were like, I want to talk to God. And again, the church kids, most of them would still go up, but some of them were like, I don't know, it's kind of weird. The neighborhood kids were like, this is great. I have so many questions for God. And so it really, and I had to really like hold myself together because I did this 5 times in a row and I almost died. It was so tiring. But I wanted to weep every time. And I had other leaders that were watching and I just would say, do you see this? Do you see? Like, you just heard what I said. There's nothing magical. But what they're desperate for is an outlet, a spot where they can go. And that happens everywhere I go. Kids are going, oh, I want to talk to God. I want to ask him this. I want to do this. And it's amazing. I love when adults come just to observe and they're like, so how did that work? I don't know. I can't explain it. I cannot explain it, but it works. Anything else? Any other observations about that? What's really interesting that with the fewer minutes that we get, I actually think we need to create more space for stuff like this. Because like we talked about the first session, transformation over information. And this is where transformation happens. They go, I just heard that. I just read that. Okay, that's how that applies to my life. And so it's funny because you would think, well, we just need to get busier. We have fewer minutes. But I actually think we need to slow down even more and create space for them to know they can talk to God. So we're going to talk through a few things. First thing I'll always start with is us as leaders, but relationship really matters. When it comes down to just having a few minutes, relationship matters. And what does that look like? It means that you're there. And this sounds really like simple, but it means show up. Show up. If you've said you're going to serve, be there. And you don't do that because you don't want the children's director to get mad at you. You do it because you understand this is important. This is important. You can't build relationship with kids if you're not present in their lives. So you need to be there. And notice what the first thing I don't say is start talking. Sometimes it's a lot more about our presence than anything we have to say. But they need you to be there. They need you to be there. My husband started serving with our youth group, and he's leading a group of junior high boys. And he's getting taken for a ride. Like, he had them out Wednesday night. They were doing a pumpkin carving thing, and he goes, and he's Guatemalan, and so there's cultural things. He goes, have you ever heard of this ding-dong thing? I'm like, what? He goes, ding-dong thing, ding-dong ditch, where you go and you ring someone's doorbell and you run away. Well, he let the kids talk him into doing it. And he's like, I didn't know what was going on. I'm like, oh, God bless us all. Like, you're going to get arrested. But he is serving. And the thing is, we actually now are planning our schedule so that he is there on Wednesdays. Because it's so important that he's there. And so you be there. You be there. So we're arranging what we can so he can be there. Because presence is so important. Also, you got to get yourself ready because you're going to be used by God. You will be used. And a lot of times when you're working with kids, you don't feel like you're being used. Have you ever felt that? Like what you're doing with kids is pointless or not working? Yeah, let's be honest. We all have. I have all the time. All the time. And I do these camps and I talk for a full week or whatever. There's usually one night every time where I go, oh, that was awful. That did not work at all. Because it just doesn't feel right, or kids are just not focused or whatever. But the reality is you will be used. But you have to be ready and make sure you're in a usable position, because God will use you, whether you want to be used or not. And being used of God sometimes is not comfortable. And sometimes it means you have tough conversations, or you have things happen that you wish you didn't see or didn't have happen. So much of it is just being available. I remember I had a kid come to me, a little girl came to me after one of the camp sessions last year. And I'd had her at camp for 3 years. So it was her third year with me. And it took me 3 years to really win her over. And so she came up and she started to cry. And pretty soon she was sobbing. And it wasn't that I'm an 11-year-old girl. I don't know why I'm crying. I just cry, you know, like, because girls like to cry sometimes just to cry. But she was like sobbing, like, and I thought, oh my goodness. So she couldn't get control. And so I said, come on, we're gonna go for a walk. And we walked outside, and I had a couple adults watch, because I don't walk around alone with children. I'm just really careful. And well, she begins to tell me her story, and she begins to tell me about how she lives with her grandparents because her mom's in jail. And she begins to tell me about her uncle who's been sneaking into her bedroom at night and doing things to her. And she begins to tell me how he will hide under her bed, and she has to lock her door. And she's telling, and I realize she's never told anyone this before. And I'll be really, really honest, I did not want to be used in that moment. Do you know how badly I wish I could have not heard that? Right? But I always think, if she, like, then who will hear her story? If we're not willing, who will hear it? And it took 3 years for her to trust me. It really did. And she told me, she goes, I finally knew I could tell you my story. Well, reality is, then we had to get the law involved. We had to do a police report. It was heartbreaking. And after talking to her, I went back into my speaker room, and I had a very messy meltdown about it, where I was really mad at God and really mad at the system and mad at everyone, but mostly just heartbroken for her. And then I went, okay, at least I know tonight she sleeps safe. Tonight she sleeps safe. Tomorrow night she sleeps safe. There are times I go, I don't want to hear that. And there's times I wish I could forget what I've heard as well. But again, we want to be used, don't we? If you don't, then get out of kids' ministry. You can do the hospitality and serve cookies. That's pretty low-level commitment as far as emotions. But man, with kids, if they trust you, and that's why we talk about being authentic. If you're authentic with them, they'll be authentic with you. And sometimes you're like, oh, that's a lot. You also want to be Jesus. You just want to have the heart of Jesus for these kids. You want to make every minute count, but sometimes we think that means we have to be really scheduled and really detailed, but actually it's those moments where we show love and grace and compassion and we talk to them, and we want to be authentic. I always say authenticity is always returned with authenticity. I have never not had it returned. Never. And there are a lot of times I wish I hadn't heard what I heard. But again, I go, well, if I don't, who tells them? And I really feel like the church should be the safest place for a kid to come with questions and hurts and everything other than their home. In a perfect world, they have a safe home. But we have so many kids that come through my home church that don't come from safe homes. So we want them to know, hey, here, you're loved. Here, you're welcome. Here, we're going to be real and authentic with you. All right, so we're going to get into a few details, which you're going to really like. Those of you that are very type A are going to be like, finally, tell me what to do. So first of all, when it comes to making every minute count, you have to be prepared. And this is the part we struggle with sometimes, but you need to be prepared. And that means you ideally should be reading through your lesson ahead of time. Okay, and I know, right? Like you go, duh. How many of you, let's be honest, have not always read your lesson ahead of time? I have. Or I pray for a stoplight on the way to church so I can read through my lesson. If we're really going to make every minute count, we have to be prepared. Because what happens is if we're not prepared, then we have all the kids in the room. We're like, oh no, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing with them. And then we're looking at our lesson and we can't even focus on the kids. So what I say is if you can, read your lesson through ahead of time. Just know where you're going. And I would say, man, do it on a Monday or Tuesday if you're prepping for Sunday, because then you can pray about it throughout the week. But read it through ahead of time, just so you know where you're going. The great thing when you do that, too, is you get to make it your own. Then it's not just I'm doing whatever the lesson says. It's I'm owning this. And I know what the kids need, and I know what God's impressing on my heart. So this is what we're going to talk about. And then pray through your lesson throughout the week. This is a big thing, too. And I am guilty all the time of not praying enough for how God will use me with the kids or praying over my lesson. Because it just becomes a job to me or another thing to check off. Or I've served in children's ministry for 55 years. Like, I forgot to pray today. But pray through it throughout the week. It'd be interesting, too, because God begins to work on your heart about these same things. And you go, oh, God's been teaching me this, which is then a really great thing to talk to the kids about. And go, you know, you guys are talking about worry today. I read through this, and I have been worrying this week, and God's been showing me that I need to not worry and I need to trust him. You've just been real and authentic. Look for ways to insert your own experience into the lesson. This is huge. This is huge. You've got to be personal when you teach. You have to be. And I would actually say, ignore some of the lesson in favor of being real and personal about what you're going through or a way that God's been teaching you that. You will get their attention, you will keep their attention, and you will earn their respect. And I actually, if you could look through my notes, when I prep for speaking to kids, I have, here's my main point, here's the scripture, here's my authentic piece, here's my real experience piece. And I have to plan it out ahead of time. I do. Some people are naturally authentic and just can on the spot come up with stuff. I have to usually plan a little bit ahead of time. I always have a story, but when it comes to kids, I always have to be careful, right? And think through what I want to say. But what they're not looking for is for you to read out the lesson and go, well, Sally saw a fish and then Bob saw the fish and that's boring. Do you understand? That's boring. And kids know when you're reading. But if you tell your own story, you know your story. So always look, I would say if you teach and you have not inserted a piece of yourself or your own story into the lesson, you've missed an opportunity. And that's a shame. It really is. Because you've missed an opportunity to take what God is teaching them and you and bringing it down to their level. Does that make sense? Are you guys okay? You look tired all of a sudden. It's freaking me out a little. I have to do another game. Okay, and then my rule here is I try to be as prepared as possible, but interruptible as possible. This is my rule. So the reasoning behind this is I'm a gifted communicator. It's a gift God has given me. And I can talk for hours without preparing. And I am good. I could be really good for a couple hours. But when I don't prepare, I'm not being responsible. And then the other thing is we can be so prepared that the Holy Spirit couldn't break through if he walked into the room as a real person. Like because we're just, nope, sorry, we don't have time for you, Holy Spirit. Like, we have to move in 2 minutes. And so you want to find a happy medium. And what I do is I try to be as prepared as possible. So like for a camp season, I go away for 3 days and I pray through stuff. I do all my research. I have my outlines. So I know enough of where we're going that I can get up and I can do it without reading or with overly looking at my notes, without overly looking at them. But I also know it well enough that if God says, hey, I think you need to go this direction, or I want you to talk about this instead, it doesn't throw me off too much. Does that make sense? So you want to know stuff so you can go, okay, I feel like we need to go this way. Instead of just going up and be like, well, I haven't prepared anything, so how are you guys today? Like, you would have had me leave if I had done that. Like, sorry, it's been a busy week. I didn't get anything ready. So what do you want to talk about? So I try to be as prepared as possible, but interruptible as possible. And that kind of is my mantra. I want to be really prepared, but also, Holy Spirit, interrupt if you want to. I would rather do what you want to do. All right, this is what we're going to do. You have at your tables some Fruit Loops, which if you don't know what Fruit Loops are, they're circular cereal, okay? Right here, they taste delicious. You also have a pipe cleaner, which is that fuzzy stick. You have 1 minute. You don't have pipes? You don't have pipe cleaners? That's because you guys are the winners of nothing. But here, I'll bring them. You can have this one. Okay, you have 1 minute to get. So this is really funny. I was reading through some of these, and one I do at other churches is they have to move like little kick cereal, the little ball cereal, from one cup to another using chopsticks. Well, white people can't do that. So I thought, I can't do that here. You guys would beat everyone. So I was like, forget that. So what you're gonna do is you can pour some Fruit Loops out on the table because you need to pick them up from the table, but you have to thread them onto your pipe cleaner with only using one hand. So you can only use one hand and you have to get as many onto your pipe cleaner. Yep, one hand to do it. And you can't help each other. So you can't be... Yeah, so instead of using... So go ahead and take one hand and sit on it. So you don't cheat. Okay, and I'm going to give you a minute and just a second. On your mark. Get set. Some of you already started. That's okay. Go. Oh, some of you are really good at this. Some of you are not. That's okay. We do not judge.
Can I push in?
No. No, that is cheating. Put your hand under your bottom. Gotta sit on it. Good. Okay, count how many you have on there. All right, does anyone have more than four? You all have more than four. Good job. All right, 10? More than 10? Okay. More than 15? More than 18? More than 20? More than 24?
Wow.
More than 27? Just 27. Right at 27. Okay, anyone have 28? 29? Okay, I think our highest number is 27. Does anyone have more than 27? Okay, if you have 27, raise your hand. We got two 27s? Three? Just give your prizes applause. Super good. That's awesome. Go ahead and eat your cereal if you want to. It's delicious. I've been eating some. Which I don't ever do anytime I speak. So I don't know. You guys bring out the casual in me, I think. Okay, again, though, what were you thinking about when you were doing that? You're just trying to get it on there. You guys are so quiet. You're like, we're concentrating. But what if we approach teaching kids with that amount of, like, intensity and focus? That would change how we teach, right? As we focus. I remember being a children's pastor, and one of my volunteers was a teenage girl, and she was always on her phone. And I took her phone away. I'm like, nope, you're done. And she's like, well, I'm like, you can't be focused on the kids if you're on your phone all the time. But adults, we do that too. You know, like, so we really, really, and I don't mean just on our phone, but maybe we're talking to our friend in the hallway or whatever. We've got limited amount of time. And studies have proven that if a kid finds Jesus before the age of 12, that is huge. It's huge for their development. It's huge for their walk with Christ. In fact, 85% of people, adults today who found Christ, were before the age of 14. It's a huge opportunity and window for salvation, but also discipleship. So let me ask you, how many of you were 14 or younger when you found Jesus or made a decision to follow Jesus? Okay. How many of you were older than 14? Very cool. It's always fun I was with the Hmong group last week. In cultures where it's first, second generation, that number is always different. Because it's just culturally and what your story is. So they're actually probably 85% of them found Jesus as adults. But the reality is just how God created the brain development, that decision is made as a kid. And it's an easy decision because you just read their prayers. They don't have any doubts. Oh, God told me to, so I'm doing it. As adults, we have a lot more we have to struggle with, right? Those of you that found Christ as an adult, did you struggle more trying to figure out doubts and stuff? Yeah. Or even trying to debunk or ignore some of the stuff you had been taught that wasn't of God. Like, that's another thing. So we want to be as prepared as possible, interruptible as possible, but we want to be really focused. Also, it breaks up the day when I give you snacks, right? That's another reason we did this. So eat your cereal or make jewelry out of your pipe cleaners. Okay, so we're going to talk about experience. We want to engage their hearts. We want their hearts to feel something. And I'm not just saying emotions, but we want their hearts to connect with what's going on. We want them to go, I have never thought about that. Oh, that I would feel that way too. We want them to get engaged that way. We also want to engage them physically. Tomorrow I'm talking about creative Bible teaching or creative teaching. I don't remember the actual title. I'm going to get into a lot more detail on this. It's going to be fun. But we want to engage them physically. Kids have to move. All right, that's another shift that's happened. Kids used to sit still a little better, I think. And maybe that was part of the respect thing. I don't know that they actually felt good sitting still, but they sat still. They don't sit still anymore. Have you noticed that? Yeah. Now, here's the deal. A lot of them can't sit still. Some of them have, they're on the spectrum, or they have special need and they can't sit still. But God made kids to move. He did. And now once you start working with teenagers, God made them to just sleep and just eat and sleep. Like, that's what they do. Am I right, girls? Yeah. Yep. But with kids, they have to move and they learn better. So you want to engage them physically. It's so hard for kids if you come in and sit down and crisscross applesauce and stop moving. That just is so hard for them. I was teaching our Wednesday night program a number of years ago. I was leading it, actually. And we brought in a special speaker, my uncle. He's a creationist. And he did this whole thing on dinosaurs. Well, he didn't really go for the right group. Like, he spoke for 30 minutes to kids, and they were bored. And they were dying. And our kids do not sit still well. They're like, all of them have special needs of some sort, so they don't sit still. So I'm watching them, and they're trying so hard. Well, afterwards, they were supposed to go right to small groups. Go and sit and talk to your leader. And the leaders are looking at me, and they're like, help us. And I realize this is unfair. It's unfair of these kids to make them, okay, thanks for sitting for a half hour. Please move over here and sit down again. And so we did a race, and I put them outside in the parking lot, and I said, do you see the big rock over there? Yeah, go get it. And they all ran for it. And then they came back, and I could still see a little devil in their eyes. And so I said, go get it again. And they all ran again. And by that time, they had tired out enough, they could sit. But it would have been just mayhem. And we would have spent more time asking them to sit still than just saying, go ahead and move. Go ahead and move. You need to move. That's okay. So see, Jessica needs to move. I like the walk that you're doing. Is that the don't let the floor make noise walk? It doesn't, but they need to move. So you want to engage them physically. I've done where I did one time I talked about the Israelites in the Promised Land, and I took the kids outside, and we actually walked around the church building while I told the story. And they thought that was the coolest thing ever. I felt like it was really chaotic, but I realized it's not about me when I'm teaching, is it? It's about the kids. We've done other times where I have them up moving, and we're walking around, and they need to move. So you want to engage them physically. You want to engage their minds as well. Kids are thinkers. Naturally, they are deep thinkers. I used to think that we needed to help them think, but I realized they already think. They have these huge questions about God. I had a kid come to me, and he goes, God can't lie, right? And I'm like, yes. Or no, it was God can't murder. And I could tell he was trying to get me, you know? He's like, right, yeah, but I feel like you have something sneaky going on. And he goes, well, then how did he murder everyone with the flood? And I was like, oh, I have no idea. This really good, hard question. But they think about this stuff. And what we need to do, I think at some point, they're asking these really big questions. Like, I had a girl go, how do I fully die to myself? I don't know. I don't even know how to fully die to myself. But they're asking these big questions, and we're bringing them and going, okay, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus. And we're teaching them the books of the Bible, which is not bad. But I think at some point, they kind of give up and go dumb, you know, and they quit asking hard questions. So then they go to youth group, and then youth pastors are like, these kids are dumb. Yeah, we gave you dumb kids. Sorry. They're not dumb, though. But at some point, they quit thinking because we don't allow them to think. So you want to engage their mind. I'm always like, what do you think about this? What would you think if this happened? And I want them to really think about it. If you came face to face, like I did a whole Daniel series, and if you were in the lion's den and there was a lion looking at you, what would you think? Because we just go through that. Oh, he's in the lion's den. Daniel in the lion's. That's a cool story. I'm like, would you ask the lion how he does his hair? Because you like his mane. It's very curly and soft. No. You know, and so I like to engage their minds. I want them to think. You also want to engage their funny bones. Kids love to laugh. They love to laugh. And I would say this. You need to let them laugh. And you need to laugh too. Now, some of you are naturally funny. Like, you can tell a funny story and it works. And some of you are not. And I would say this, you need to work in your gifting, okay? Because nothing is worse than somebody who's not funny who tries to be funny. And it's awkward. So I tell people, because people, you're so funny, you should be a comedian. Do you plan out what you say? No, I am just who I am. Now, I can't tell a joke, ever. I hate jokes and I can't tell them. But you need to be who you are. And I go, I don't tell jokes. I don't plan out what I'm going to say. But funny things happen to me and I talk about it. For some of you, though, let the kids laugh. I'll even do this. We used to do, I'd have them in my group and go, we're going to all share a high, low, and a funny of the week. What was the best part of your week, a really hard part of your week, and what made you laugh? And when they share the funny, everybody laughs. And it's a way, it engages them. And they get involved because kids love to laugh and they love to have permission to laugh. And sometimes they're going to share funny things that are not appropriate because they're children, okay? Like the kid who needed prayer for his gas. His farts, as he called them. So, you know, and you just have to go, all righty, okay, yeah, we'll pray about that. And we did, we prayed for it. And then I had to leave the room and laugh really hard. Kids, I mean, right? You guys know what I mean. Okay, so do this. Look to your neighbor for just a minute, and what is one thing that you want to remember or one point that you really like? Talk to each other. All right. I heard the cricket noise. I felt like that was my turn to be done up here. All right, somebody tell me what's one point that you like, or it's a good reminder, or whatever. What are you thinking? Oh, yeah, you talk to each other, but not the scary lady up front.
What was the question again?
Oh, what were you talking about? What's one thing you really liked or a point that you liked?
Oh, the one I like is engage your mind, just like what you said. Just a Daniel's line stand, yeah. Every time when I read a story to my daughter or other kids, I never just put them in the situation. I don't think, yeah, maybe that's a very interesting thing, and next time I may want to try that.
Yeah.
We were talking about engaging them physically, and one good way to do that is through drama.
Yeah.
Our kids like to dress up. We have some little costumes always available, and they like to dress up, and I felt like the Bible story.
Yep, that's great. Yeah.
They're moving around the room. They're responding to each other.
Yeah. I've done that when I've told the David and Goliath story. I have all the boys stand and show us their muscles. Like, it's just a quick, and they think that's just the coolest. You have some that are like, I don't have any yet. But it's just a great way for them to, it engages them physically.
And they remember it better.
They do. They love it. So, what were you going to say, Jessica? You just were going to say something because you felt bad for me, weren't you? Thank you. All right, so it's okay. You don't have to say anything. All right, we're going to keep going. We're going to be done maybe early. They're asking, why do I need to know this? And I will tell you this. If they leave after you've taught them and they don't know why they need it to know what you taught, you didn't do your job. And that really checks me and helps me not just be a history teacher or not just be a, well, just get this Bible information down your throat. They need to know why. Why do I need to know this? And they're asking that. So if I can help them understand why is the story of Daniel and the lions then important? We usually just tell it's really cool because there were lions. Well, there's a point. Why is it important? And how does that matter to them? So you want to connect truth to their everyday life. Because the reality is, if they can't take God's word and figure out how that applies to their life today, it is pointless to them. It's just another book. It's just another story. So how does that matter? So you want to connect truth to their everyday life. I'm always looking for that. I'm always looking for, okay, what do I want them to take home? What do I want them? And I remember I was teaching probably my second year of speaking at camp, and I was teaching that God's plans for us are always good, but they don't always feel good. And I remember I got a call almost right after I left the camp. I'm driving away, and I always give the kids my card, and I got a call from a kid. And she goes, "Miss Mel, I just got home, and my dad's in jail. He was drinking again, and this time he's in jail for a long time." And I'm like, "Oh, I'm so sorry." She goes, "I think this is one of those times where God's plans are good, but it doesn't feel very good." And I thought, part of me was so sad, but part of me was like, yes, because she got it. She was able to connect it to her life, and that's what matters. So she might not remember the Bible story, but if she remembers that God's plans are always good, they don't always make sense, they don't always feel good, but God is still good, then I've done my job. That was such a, for me, I always think about that. I always think, when these kids go home and dad's in jail, what do they need to know? What do I want them to remember? What truth do I want them to know? And not just know, but like know deep, deep, deep in their heart. And you also, I am big on letting them choose. And what I mean by that, and those of you that have heard me speak, I always talk about choices. Because kids love power. They're very into being in control. If you've ever met a two-year-old, you should know this. But kids love to feel like they're in charge. And very little in a kid's life are they actually in charge of. So I love to give them choices. And the reality is that their relationship with God is on them. It's not on me as a parent. It's not as me as a teacher. It's on them. So I always talk about choices. It's your choice. You choose. What do you want to do with Jesus? It's your choice. I can't make that choice for you. You're not a robot. God didn't create you to be a robot. God wants you to choose, but it's up to you what you choose. And so I'll give real clear choices, you know, like, you can choose to trust God even when life is hard. But it's your choice. I can't do it for you. So letting them choose. What's really cool when you do that, you get notes like this. God, I love you, and tonight decided to follow you. And this is not an emotional response. This is, I made this decision. And I will say, kids are really easy to manipulate. They're really easy to get them to feel something or force something. And I'm really passionate about not doing that. So it's a choice. And I'm pretty analytical about, like, it's your choice. God did this. Jesus died for you. He loves you. But what will you do with Jesus? It's up to you. What I have seen, though, is I don't get as many kids who make decisions, like ask Jesus into their heart. But the kids that do know what they did. So, like, if we're looking at peer numbers, they go, well, this puppet evangelist got, you know, 4,000. Well, I got 300, but every one of them can tell you what they did and why they did it and what that meant to them. Does that make sense? So I'm really big on allowing them to choose. And they go, tonight I just, and it's very, a lot of times, non-emotional for kids. They're like, I decided to follow Jesus tonight. I had a kid just in August at my camp in Minnesota. She comes up to me in the middle of a water fight. She's like, I need to tell you something. I decided it was time to start following Jesus. So I did that last night. I prayed in my bunk bed. I'm like, oh. And of course, I'm like, that's a wonder. She's like, goodbye. And she's done. Like, she's done. She's out. But she had made that decision. My decision. This one says, Dear Lord, I feel like you want me to read your word more. Please help me through my journey to grow more in you. I love you, Lord. So they begin to listen to God. They begin to go, what might God be telling me or showing me? Because you got to be careful with telling. I feel like I need to I'm going to choose to read my Bible more. That's great. They're not reading it because I'm giving them a ribbon. They're reading it because they feel like God wants them to read it more. I love this one. Dear Jesus, thanks for letting me choose you. Isn't that great? It's so, I'm like, yes, thanks for letting me choose you. And I tell you, when they make that decision, it's their own. This one's great too. This is so kids. I don't know what to believe. Some of my family doesn't believe in you. Same with some of my friends. But also, some of my friends and family believe in you. If you are real, please show me a sign that you're actually in heaven somewhere. Thank you. Isn't that great? They're like, there it is. This is Ellie. Ellie wrote this on Monday of camp. This is my, and I watched her write it. So cute. And I just watched the week go by. Last day of camp. Dear God, tonight I decided to believe in you no matter what others think, because I believe my decision is right for me, not for, it's not anyone else's decision. Thanks. And here's the, I think Ellie knows Jesus. Don't you think? Don't you think that was a really conscious decision? She's like, I took in all of the information and this is the decision I've decided to make. And those are the kind of kids that I want to raise up. Those are the kind of kids I want to come out of our ministries. I made that decision. You don't have the kid who goes, I pray every night and ask Jesus into my heart. Now that is normal for a kid, but they can go, but I remember the first time I did it was there, and this is why I did it. That's important to me. All right, I'm almost done. It's okay to be quiet. I'm going to just say that. As adults, we're really good at feeling quiet. We're really good at just talking and talking because they're quiet and it's awkward, so I'll just keep talking. But what we need to remember is that, like we said, Beth said, they need an outlet. They need to be able to talk. It's okay to be quiet and let them talk. It's okay to go, you know, that wasn't what I had planned for today, but let's talk about that. They need to talk. And keep in mind, if you're teaching because it's your agenda, you're not in the right heart spot. It is about them and what God desires to do in them. So I don't get upset when things don't go as planned because I go, okay, Lord, I'm assuming you had a plan there. Like, I know that to be true. So that's the way we went. Let them talk. Also, let them teach. Now, this is a big one. And this, people are like, what? What? I'm the teacher. But here's the deal. Those that, especially kids that have been in the church a long time, they learn a lot when they teach. And I actually, my fifth and sixth graders, I actually made them start teaching our fifth Sunday. So every quarter, they taught. And I would give them the lesson ahead of time, and they would prepare it, and they would do our large group time with all the kids. And they did a really good job. Did they do it as good as I would have done it? No. Was it a hot mess? Yeah. But you know what? They taught, and they did so good. And it was so important for them, and I have those statistics, I think, on your thing. I'm going to actually just go to that real quick. This. I love this. I always am looking at this. I wrote that on the back of your thing. So we learn 10% of what we read, 20% of what we hear, 30% of what we see, 50% of what we see and hear, 70% of what we discuss, let them talk, 80% of what we experience, and 95% of what we teach others. And I looked at this a long time ago and I thought, I've been teaching to the 20% and I'm not okay with that. So I really have changed my teaching style a lot based on this, which is why we do discussion, which is why we do experiential things and why I let them teach. And I don't just mean stand up and be the teacher, but talk to each other for just a minute. Where have you seen God do this? Or where have you felt God comfort you when you're lonely? Or whatever. It's just a way that they can put to words and really concrete it in their heart and mind, what they've been doing. And then my other point there was just let them ask questions. Let them ask questions. Don't be afraid of the questions. We talked about this earlier, but don't be afraid of their questions. And I'll say, just for those of you that weren't here, I've really had to learn that it's not so much that they want me to answer the questions as they want permission to ask the questions. And so letting them know, it's okay that you have that question. I also will tell kids this all the time. I'll talk about video games. When you pass a video game, do you want to go back and play it again? No, that's boring. Well, if we could understand and figure everything out about God, we'd be bored. And so there's a lot of pieces and parts of God that we can't fully understand, and that keeps us interested. And so I'll tell them that all the time. I don't even know the answer to that. I can't figure God out completely, and that's okay. And that's been a great answer for some of them who are like, but why? But how? But where? Where is heaven, Miss Mel? And so I just am really honest about that. And the honesty to them just gives them permission to not know, and that's okay. It doesn't make me look bad. All right, questions about that. Okay, talk in your groups for just a minute. What's something you really liked? And then we'll end. Anise, if you need to go, that's mine. Okay, here you go. I was trying to give you an easy out. Like. Right. I got to turn my mic on. All right, we're going to do one more thing. You have a cookie on your table. I need you to put it on your forehead. Go ahead, I'll wait. Put it on your forehead. And you have to get it from your forehead. If you have your glasses on, this could be bad, so take your glasses off. From your forehead to your mouth without using your hands. You have 1 minute. Go. The best job in the world. Oh, good job. I'm just gonna take some videos. You did it. How many of you felt like that was a really long minute? Did anyone do it? Get it done? Signe got in her mouth, but did you cheat?
No,
just kind of like, what a happy accident. It fell into my mouth. Again, 1 minute. You can do a lot in a minute. And you can have fun. All of these games are fun to do with kids, too. They think it's just the best. So little things like that. And I just Googled, you know, minute to win it games and found ones that I could do easily. So don't think I created any of these. I maybe just adapted a few of them. Like, I wasn't giving you chopsticks. So make every minute count. Can you do it, do you think? It's about being intentional. But just, and I always, like, every time I teach this, I remember 95%, but I remember again how important it is to really be intentional. It's just, it's really good for me to remind myself as well. So I am done.